Good evening, everybody. I'd like to welcome you to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is David, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, David.
For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with a serenity prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and listen to the difference.
Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask those present to please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. The AA preamble says, Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And so this evening we are on step four, part two. And please help me welcome our panel. We have Adita and Bruce. All right. So what I'm going to do is read a paragraph, and then the panel will take turns sharing for a few minutes on each their experience on each paragraph as we read it. Step four says, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. First paragraph tonight is on page 67. Notice that the word fear is bracketed alongside the difficulties with Mr. Brown, Mrs. Jones, the employer, and his wife. This short word somehow touches about every aspect of our lives. It was an evil and corroding thread. The fabric of our existence was shot through with it. It set in motion trains of circumstances which brought us misfortune we felt we didn't deserve. But did not we ourselves set the ball rolling? Sometimes we think fear ought to be classed with stealing. It seems to cause more trouble. Bruce?
My name is Bruce. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Bruce.
You know, the thing I got from this paragraph is sort of a double dose of fear is everywhere. It's in every part of my life. And speaking for men, that's a really hard thing for a guy to face up to and admit to. But you know, one of the ways I got over it was this: in the first part of the fourth set, when I was doing my resentment inventory, it talked about selfishness and self-centeredness, and that we think is the root of the problem. And so I had a little bit of an inspiration, which I attribute to God, that when I was doing my resentment inventory, that maybe whenever I came across any resentment, either selfishness or self-centeredness needed to be on the list until I could prove otherwise. And just basically assume it was there. And I kind of did the same thing with the fear inventory. And because the big book, by the time I got into these pages, you know, I've always been kind of doubting Thomas. And when I read a book and I find a mistake or an error in the book, well, then in my mind, that brings into question everything else in the book. My experience with the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous is that I have not found a single mistake in that book yet. Everything it ever said about me is true, everything, and I think a lot of people have said the same thing. It is just complete honesty. So when the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous started telling me I needed to look at fear in pretty much every facet of my life, I was open-minded enough to do that, and I had gotten a lot of relief from the resentment inventory, and I applied that equally to the fear inventory. Adita?
My name's Adita. I'm an alcoholic.
Adita.
So I'm fearful right now. I got these paragraphs a week or two ago, and I guess a good idea would have been to look at them before, but I look over here and he's got notes, so I'm a little nervous. Fear was one of those words when I first came into the meetings. There was two things that I heard everybody else talk about that I thought didn't apply to me, and one of them was fear and the other was selfishness. And everybody talked about being selfish, and I was like, yeah, you all sound selfish to me. And everybody talked about being afraid of things, and I thought, yeah, I'm not afraid of anything. I don't know what you guys are talking about. It took me a while of being sober to realize it's because I had liquid courage. You know, I wasn't fearful of anything because I was always drunk, and I could handle anything with that in my back pocket. It was like my secret weapon. So fear, after I got sober, became a different thing because I started to realize not only was I afraid of everything, but all of my actions or my reactions to life were based on my fears. I didn't even realize it, but I thought about this. Today was, I live in an apartment building, and I remember when I would be drinking, at the end it got so crazy, I was so like, I don't know if it's paranoid or what, if other people were coming into the building and I'd hear them in the hallway, I'd like get real quiet and get still. Like as if somebody might knock on my door or something. You know, I was afraid of people. I was afraid of leaving my house. I would get up on my day off, I'd have to have whiskey in my coffee to go to the grocery store to get food, you know. I remember I was a few months sober, and I spent, it was after a meeting on a Saturday night, and I just got to talking to this guy, and we ended up hanging out in the parking lot for like 2 or 3 hours afterwards, and everybody else had already left. And I told him, I was like, you know, it used to take me like a pint of whiskey and a six pack to leave my house to go meet up with my friends to go out for the night. You know, I had to pregame to go out, just to hang out with my own friends. And he said, so kind of hanging out and talking to a guy you've never met before for 3 hours like this is kind of a miracle. And I was like, you know, blown away. But it was like those kinds of fears kept me from being a part of. And so this idea that it like... the fabric of my entire existence was shot through with it, really struck me. So, and I can relate to that. Thanks.
Awesome. We're going to continue on page 68. Perhaps there's a better way. We think so, for we're now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We are in the world to play the role He assigns. Just to the extent we do as we think He would have us and humbly rely on Him, does He enable us to match calamity with serenity. We never apologize to anyone for depending upon our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality the way of weakness. Paradoxically, it is the way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. They never apologize for God. Instead, we let him demonstrate through us what he can do. We ask him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he would have us be. At once, we commence to outgrow fear. Bruce?
I'm reminded when I guess I had about 8 months of sobriety, and I was in church, and there was a prayer, and I had done the steps. In fact, by that time, I had done this all 12 steps twice. I had done it with two different sponsors, and the word fear, I had begun to understand just how important this part of the program is, and I won't go too religious here because it's not a religious program, but the prayer said one line. It said, remove from us our faithless fears. And it was at that point, for the first time ever, that I ever could connect that fear was essentially lack of faith. Whether your spirituality involves religion or just is more spiritual, it's still lack of, or fear is lack of faith. And I began to understand that and accept that, well, hey, this applies not only to us alcoholics, but earthlings as well. And that's where the spirituality of the program came in. And so it kind of had to hit me like a bullet right between the eyes in that prayer when I was least expecting it. But all of a sudden, when I heard the word fear, my ears popped, you know, turned up. And listened a little closer, and all of a sudden I heard the rest of that, and it really hit home for me. And I have since found that to be true. And whenever I'm in fear, I look around and say, okay, so what is going on where I think that it's not going to work out better? And, you know, the whole program for me is I never got the bolt of lightning that said one minute I'm an alcoholic that can't get sober, and the next minute everything's perfect. It has been more of a gradual thing, just like the big book says in the appendix. And, you know, one of the things where the fear has sort of abated itself is when I let God do the work, it always works out better than if I try to manage the situation. And after I've learned that enough times over and over and over again, it begins to start entering my thinking. Well, maybe I just need to let God handle this. Or maybe I need to see what his plan is. And it always seems to work out better.
Yeah, that's... yeah, that's... I love how the book presents you with the problem, and then it presents you with the answer. So there's fear, and then now we're following it up with faith being kind of the reaction to that. I love this line, we trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. It's this idea of laughing at those who think spirituality the way of weakness. I was that person that sat on the bar stool, and I could argue why spirituality and religion and faith were just like for those that it was like a crutch for people, and it wasn't like I didn't need that because I had me, you know. I left home at 18 and I've been me, you know. I can handle all of this until, like, you know, a lot of years of alcohol beat me down, and I end up here, which is a good thing. I'm happy to be here. But that idea of fear and faith not coexisting, when I listed out my fears, I saw that I had a lot. And that was good because now I was aware of them. And so they were out on paper and I could see them in my life. It didn't change the fact that I still reacted to them often, and my behaviors were still ruled by them often. Not as much, and it's dissipated some over time, but I can still find it's been a learning lesson and a practice that when I get fearful, for example, anger is a quick response for me. And And I don't realize the fear underlying my anger until some time has passed and the anger's kind of worked itself out. But I'll have situations that have come up in my life that were difficult to deal with in sobriety because it's, you know, not all rainbows. And I realized I was letting the fear dominate, and I went back to my own thinking of I can handle this, I can manage this, I can control this situation. Until I just wear myself out, like physically just burn myself out and collapse. And then I'm like, oh, I could turn it over to God. Maybe God's got this and I don't have to worry so much. And it all works out. That's it. It all works out. It always works out. Everything's happening as it's supposed to. And me thinking that I get to control it is nonsense. It's, but it's having to learn that lesson over and over again that now it doesn't take 3 or 4 days of burning myself out. I can get there in like an hour and be like, okay, it's all right, God's got this. And the other thing relating to that idea of having faith for me, is that I also have this, this is just my personal belief with faith and trusting in God, is that it's easier for me to go through the difficult times when during the good times I remind myself that this too shall pass. So like I can be having a really great time at a concert and dancing and the music's going and the lights are going and I just kind of remind myself this isn't gonna last forever. And it's not like a morbid kind of thing. It makes me go deeper into the experience and enjoy it even greater. And so then when the bad stuff happens, the fear starts to crop up in my life and I start getting anxious about things and everything starts spiraling out of control. It's easier for me to touch base with that idea that this too shall pass and I can trust in God. I mean, the short version is trust God, clean house, help others. If two of those words, if 1/3 of it is to trust God, I mean, that's a pretty important part, so.
Thanks. All right, we're gonna continue on page 68. Now, about sex. Many of us needed an overhauling there. But above all, we tried to be sensible on this question. It's easy to get way off track. Here we find human opinions running to extremes, absurd extremes, perhaps. One set of voices cries that sex is a lust of our lower nature, a base necessity of procreation. Then we have the voices who cry for sex and more sex, who bewail the institution of marriage, who think that most of the troubles of the race are traceable to sex causes. They think we don't have enough of it, or it isn't the right kind. They see its significance everywhere. One school would allow a man no flavor for his fare, and the other would have us all on a straight pepper diet. We want to stay out of this controversy. We do not want to be the arbiters of anyone's sex conduct. We all have sex problems. We'd hardly be human if we didn't. What can we do about them? Bruce?
Yeah, every time I read that, now about sex, we have to talk about this. You know, it's going back and just looking at the 4-step in total. When I was drinking, I always liked to be able to rationalize why I needed to drink today. And what the 4-step has shown me is that pretty much I have a cafeteria. I can just walk down the aisle and I'll say, I'll take 2 resentments, please, and maybe 1 thing of fear and 1 thing of sex. And before you know it, you know, I got the guilt, I got the fear, and I got the anger, and I need to have a drink. And while pretty much when you look at the way I drank, there was a pretty much nothing that can really rationalize why I should pick up that first drink. It really was more nothing more than an excuse. But when I was out there actively drinking, that's all I needed was an excuse. And why do I need to pick up a drink today? And my wife, or my second wife at the time, said she could always figure out when I was going to go back out, because she said I'd pick a fight that day. Well, there's a resentment. And if I didn't pick a fight, well, I'd find something to be fearful of. And if that didn't work, I could remember some of the things I did that I shouldn't have been doing in the sex arena. And that would send me back out. So these were all things that I needed to get out and needed to get out and share with my sponsor so that they were no longer a deepest, darkest secret. One of the things my sponsor did for me when I work the steps, and what I do with my sponsees, is once we get through all three lists and go through everything, I just ask one simple question: Have you put your deepest, darkest secret on this piece of paper? And if the answer is no, well, then why not? Because this is the chance to get rid of all that stuff, to get rid of all the excuses on why it's okay to pick up another drink.
So when David asked me to speak on fear and sex, I think it was because of the sex part. But I think I'd like to go with the writer's opinion that we want to stay out of this controversy. That would be a great answer right now. Also, I don't really know, I still haven't figured out what straight pepper diet is, but it's just spicy. relationships and sex in general kept me drunk. Were a big part of why I continued to drink. There was a lot of guilt involved with the way, when I think about this whole sex part, it's really about relationships to me, the intimate ones. And I cheated on every single person I was ever with, and that's just fact. And there's a lot of guilt that comes with that. And the way to bury guilt and not deal with any of that is to drink, and drink a lot, and then you can kind of live with stuff. And it's funny, because when I did this inventory, I realized like a lot of things, but I kind of put it all on the alcohol. I put all that behavior and the way I treated women and the way I viewed women as being influenced by the alcohol. And a couple years into sobriety, I did the steps again, and I found I had been repeating a lot of those same behaviors in sobriety, and realized it wasn't the alcohol, that's just the person I am. And that was a terrible feeling. That's when actually things started to change as regards to sex and relationships, and now how I viewed all of that. I think I'll leave it at that for now, because we got more.
Okay. Yeah. Continuing on page 69, we reviewed our conduct over years past. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? Whom had we hurt? Did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Where were we at fault? What should we have done instead? We got this all down on paper and looked at it. In this way, we tried to shape a sane and sound ideal for our future sex life. We subjected each relation to this test. Was it selfish or not? We asked God to mold our ideals and to help us to live up to them. We remembered always that our sex powers were God-given and therefore good, neither to be used lightly or selfishly, nor to be despised and loathed. Ruth?
You know, a lot like the resentment inventory, where the big book talks about the three columns, and then if you read the literature where the example doesn't show a fourth column, but it's there, that where we're supposed to talk about our part. And what my sponsor did when I did the resentment inventory, he said, I just want to hear four words. I want to hear, were you selfish, self-centered, dishonest, or fearful? And nothing else. No excuses, no whatever. Just when I did the inventory, that's the only words he wanted to hear after what I did and who I was angry at and why. But in terms of my part, he didn't want anything besides those four words. And when we got to the second inventory, then it became a five-column list. And you know, it talks about each of those sentences as one of the columns. And the very first thing it says is, was I selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? And if it didn't meet that test, it probably didn't need to be on the list. So the only part I've always kind of struggled with is the very last question is, what should I have done? Because I'm like, not done it, maybe? I mean, that seems like the only answer I can ever come up with. But really, it just boils down to, did I hurt somebody else or not? You know, and if I hurt somebody else, if they would have known about it, would it have hurt? Because I was pretty sneaky. But if the answer is, if my actions had seen the light of day and it would have hurt somebody else, then it needs to be on this list. Why? Because this is the kind of stuff I drank over. And I'm trying to not drink anymore, so I need to get rid of this stuff. And so this list is equally important, though, because it kind of forces me to use those words. Was I selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? And when we got to this list, my sponsor said, those are the only three words I want to hear. I don't want to hear anything else, because anything else is simply an excuse.
Yeah. I like when the book gives clear instructions like this. And I did something similar with this, where each question here ends up being a column. And that's the way I wrote it out and went over it with my sponsor. It was the same thing, that idea of selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate. It was just a check under each of those words where it was applicable. And same thing with the jealousy, suspicion, bitterness. And it helped me to really put that all on paper and have it listed out in that way, because what I found in doing the inventory in general, not just this part, but in this part specifically, was that there was patterns of behavior that I was just repeating in my life over and over again. And as far as this, in terms of sex and relationships, I had three major relationships in my life that were multiple years. And when I put it all on paper and saw the thing, I realized I really had just the same relationship, but the names were different. It was just three different women. But the behaviors that I did, the jealousy that I created there, the dishonesty, the selfishness, how I was inconsiderate, how I viewed women, all of that was playing out in the same way over and over again. And I realized it wasn't that each one of them was crazy in their own respect, which was my, you know, she was crazy because of this and she was crazy. It wasn't any of that. It was all me. Like, it was that, you know, everyone jokes about that, but like, what's the common denominator in all your crazy relationships? It's you. At some point, you have to stop and ask yourself. I remember being, I was picking up my 1 year, yeah, and it was a Saturday night, and a friend of mine in the program, he had quite a bit of time, he doesn't live here anymore, but we had a little barbecue at his house before going, going to the meeting. And my sponsor was there and all that, and we were hanging out, and all of a sudden, like, we're eating, and all of a sudden it occurred to me, like a flash, you know, that every woman I'd been with hadn't left me because of my drinking, but had left me because I'm a jerk in a clean way to put it. That's not the words I would use, but you know. My sponsor just put his arm around me and he was just like, more will be revealed. Keep coming back, you know, and I was like, wow. It took a year into it to realize that. I really like the idea of doing this as columns and putting it out on paper the way it asks. Thanks.
Continuing on page 69, whatever our ideal turns out to be, we must be willing to grow toward it. We must be willing to make amends where we have done harm, provided we do not bring about still more harm in so doing. In other words, we treat sex as we would any other problem. In meditation, we ask God what we should do about each specific matter. The right answer will come if we want it. God alone can judge our sex situation. Counsel with others is counsel with persons is often desirable, but we let God be the final judge. We realize that some people are as fanatical about sex as others are loose. We avoid hysterical thinking or advice. Bruce?
Yeah, I think they pretty much said it about as good as it can be said. I mean, the thing I take away from that is just balance. You know, it's not too far to the extreme on either side of the equation. It's just a healthy balance is what to aim for. And, you know, this once I quit drinking and worked the steps, this has really been very easy thing to do. It was when I was out there drinking and thinking it was all about me all the time, and that the only purpose of my life was to make sure I was happy and got whatever I wanted. That's when all the sex stuff that ended up on my inventory showed up. But when I started practicing these principles in all my affairs, this really did just sort of right itself. I didn't really have to do too much in it.
This idea of growing towards our ideals, that wasn't too difficult to figure out, because one of the things, like I said earlier, sex and relationships definitely fueled a lot of my drinking. It was because I was doing shady stuff, and I couldn't really deal with it in a conscious way, and so I buried it with alcohol. And then I get sober, and I try and do that same stuff, except there's this like nagging, and this thing that's eating away at me, and it's like took me a while to realize I think that this is what a conscience is. You know, I had no idea that sort of thing existed. But it was, I had a conscience. Who knew? I had no idea that would be a self-regulating theme, because I tried to repeat, like I said, I did repeat some of this behavior that I did when I was drinking in the first couple years of being sober, and it ate away at me. And I realized I can't do it, I can, but I'm gonna drink again. And the choice between having fun and having it my way and mistreating people or staying sober, it was, I want to be sober and I don't want to be that guy anymore and I don't want to treat people that way. It's kind of weird, but I now realize all of you have feelings too, and emotions and dreams and your own ideas, which is mind-boggling, you know, to a newly sober individual, and that it doesn't all revolve around me and my needs and my happiness and my immediate gratifications. That's been one of the things as it pertains to this, in that or in all of this, one of the best gifts of sobriety is that there's a pause that exists in my thoughts and my feelings or needs and my behaviors that come from there. Meaning, when I was drinking, you knew exactly where I was at. If I was pissed at you, you knew it, because you probably just got punched in the face. You know, it was that quick. It was immediate. You know, it was. If I was angry, it was obvious. And today, I can have feelings. This is both relating to fear, you know, as well. Going back to that, and there's just no, there's a space that exists that I don't have to have an immediate reaction to everything. Someone calls that this like the, this talking like this. It's funny. I'm having a moment right now, like pregnant pauses, right? I like this space in between the words. I'm enjoying it. let's see. Oh, that's right. Making that ideal and working towards it. So also, combined with making this inventory and this list and making all of this, I was also seeing a therapist at the same time regarding other things. And one of the things we discussed was maybe making a list of the women I had been with and the things I liked and didn't like about those relationships. And I was able to do that. And able to see certain things that like really worked and other things that didn't work. Combining that with what I had done and how I had treated people with this inventory made me come up with that ideal that I was actually, that I wanted in life and wanted in a relationship with another individual. And I was able to now approach being with others or, you know, people of interest in a different way, in that I had a guide. I had a guide. I had a list. I had what it was that I was after now, and what I wanted in my life. And I wasn't just randomly going to the frozen yogurt place and getting the little sample thing and trying every flavor, because I didn't know what I wanted, so I went there, you know, and I'm just gonna chill here and do this, and I don't have to do that now. I like a straight pepper diet.
I thought you were gonna finish on the yogurt. That was good. Page 70, our last paragraph for the evening. To sum up about sex, we earnestly pray for the right ideal, for guidance in each questionable situation, for sanity, and for strength to do the right thing. If sex is very troublesome, we throw ourselves the harder into helping others. We think of their needs and work for them. This takes us out of ourselves. It quiets the imperious urge when to yield would mean heartache. In this book, you read again and again that faith did for us what we could not do for ourselves. We hope you are convinced now that God can remove whatever self-will has blocked you off from him. If you've already made a decision and an inventory of your grosser handicaps, you have made a good beginning. That being so, you have swallowed and digested some big chunks of truth about yourself. Bruce?
Yeah, some big chunks of truth, and they were not very pretty. But, you know, the very first question my sponsor asked me when I asked him to be my sponsor, he said, are you through drinking and drugging? And I said, yes. And he said, are you willing to go to any lengths to maintain your sobriety? And I said, yes. and you know, this step was really the one where I began to see that the program really worked. I always like what Patrick B. used to say on step two. It says, I came to believe. And that's kind of the way it was for me. And there were not too many working brain cells when I showed up in these rooms the final time. And so it took me a while to come to and then to come to believe. But when I got to the step four and did the things that my sponsor told me to do, I began to feel the gorilla weight on my shoulder going away. And that just blew me away. And I remember about this time riding the Houston City bus, because that was my transportation at the time, and looking at this billboard of the black velvet commercials they used to do with the lady in the black velvet dress, and then it was, for the liquor. And I looked at that billboard and I said, my God, I haven't had a thought of a drink in 3 weeks. And that just absolutely blew me away, because that hadn't happened in 26 years. And so then when I worked through this step, I began to see that it wasn't all about me, that I did impact other people and I hurt other people with my actions when I was thinking about me, and that this program is all about me not hurting other people. And instead of not hurting people, how can I be of maximum service to other people? And so time and time again, the big book comes back to, when in doubt, go work with somebody else. That will keep me sober today. And so will working, just working the steps with another alcoholic. I know when I've been through many a fourth step, and I always walk away going, man, I got high class problems today. A lot higher class than they used to be, that's for sure. And the funny thing is, I remember when I did my fear inventory, and it kind of tied into the sex part, because I can't remember the number, but I'll pick one. It was somewhere around fear number 16 was, I'm afraid I'm going to get married again. And number 17 was, I'm afraid I'm not going to get married again. And then it kind of dawned on me at some point, that means I'm walking around in fear 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, just thinking about those, if I'm thinking about those two things. And that really kind of reemphasized just the corrosiveness of the fear and how it's in everything. And it turns out I was able to get married again. But instead of rushing it, a lot of people in the program said, just work on you. You've got a lot to fix. And by working on me and just letting things play out, I was able, at 5 years of sobriety, met a woman, and we ended up getting married, and we've been married now 10 years. And it's like no other relationship I've ever been in, because it's one based on honesty, first of all. And she's not in the program. She's an earthling. It's something that I always read about and heard about and didn't believe could it possibly exist, because no way would people act that way. But thanks to the program, I've been able to act more or less sanely. She might disagree with that sometimes, but more or less sanely most of the time. And a lot of it had to do with getting rid of all of this and being able to see that I am pretty much responsible for whatever messes exist in my life today.
Yeah, I was just looking at this, the idea about summing up about this. So as I've learned, I've gotten so much from sobriety, but one of the good things relating to this as well was that I've learned to be responsible with my words and actions as they pertain to other people and their emotions. And I didn't used to be that way. I really like this idea, though, if this is troublesome, we throw ourselves the harder into helping others. That's played out so many times for me in sobriety, to be the answer is to help others, regardless of what I'm going through. And especially in at the end of relationships or heartbreak or what have you. I know one time I was going through a really rough patch, and there was a guy in the program, him and his wife, and they were moving, they were leaving the area, but he had to stay here for work for an extra few weeks, and he ended up asking me if he could stay at my place, and I was going through a really terrible time, and the last thing I wanted, I just wanted to be alone, and I just didn't want to deal with the program or people and stuff, and he needed a place to crash, so I let him stay at my place, and the first night he asked me, you know, I've been sober a few months, but you know, I haven't really done anything yet. I haven't, you know, you want to be my sponsor and take me through these steps. And we spent the next 3 weeks, every single day, I would work, I would come home, we would read, or we would go to a meeting and we would read. And it was one of the most spiritual experiences I had. And it was absolutely awesome. We took two nights off where we went to hockey games, but otherwise every day was that, and it was awesome. And so that idea of throwing yourself into helping others when you're going through this or anything really, I mean, it says elsewhere that it's a program that works, or it's a, I can't remember the phrase.
Works in the rough going.
Yeah, works in the rough going, you know. You guys know. Just read the book. It's in there. It takes us out of ourselves. And so I've, regardless of what I wanted in that moment, I did it anyway, and it took me to a better place, I guess is the point I was trying to make there. And the very last paragraph is about, this is, I guess, regarding the entire fourth step that you've made, this list, you've made a good beginning. And I remember it didn't take me too long to do the fourth step, but this was the first time you're actually doing that work, and it was painful. It was difficult. It was excruciating to have to peel back these memories in your mind, things that you've wanted to ignore and bury for 15 or 20 years, just it's all piled up. You've been sweeping all this under the rug. And to pull that all out and put it on paper is not easy. It's not easy at all. And it was even more painful for me to do it 2 years into sobriety when I didn't have that monkey on my back, when I was actually just facing it, and it's probably time for me to do it again, but it's painful, so I'm avoiding it. but I know I'm going to get something out of it when I do. The point being, though, this step, like Bruce said as well, for me doing this and then sharing that with my sponsor in the next step was the first time in sobriety where I actually felt like a part of this whole thing. And I had a weight lifted. It had been a few months, but it was the first time that I felt like I could actually breathe. And I remember we did the fifth step on a Thursday night and Friday morning, and Friday night I went to a meeting, and it was the first time I sat in a chair and I felt like I actually belonged here, and I felt like I was a part of you guys. So it's a tough step to do it's, I think, where it all really, for me, it really started to change and turn around. So thanks.
Thank you. We are going to pass the Seven Traditions basket. Seven Traditions states that, does it state? Every group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the Seven Tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Although the amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world, we may want to remember that a dollar does not support as many services as it previously supported, as it used to. I can't stand that one. Are there any AA-related announcements?
My name's Adita, I'm an alcoholic.
Go, Adita!
My home group meets actually on Mondays as well at 8 p.m. It's Larchmont 12 and 12. And we meet over at Jamestown Crescent. The meeting is usually at 8 p.m. on Mondays, and most of you are here. But if next Monday you wanted, we are having our anniversary dinner. And the dinner is at 6:30. The speaker is Graham. He's at 7:30. And but then after that, we go back to our regularly 8 p.m. meeting. So if you're here, good, be here. But if you're late to get in here, or you don't want to be here for whatever reason, you want to eat some food, or... And just a plug, I usually bring donuts to the meeting, so we could use members.
You done?
But you know, this is a great meeting. This, you should keep coming here.
Yeah, yeah. What about the frozen yogurt? Are you going to have that?
No, yeah, straight pepper.
Straight pepper?
Straight
pepper yogurt. Any other AA-related announcements? You can take 2 minutes. It's fine. Okay, Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members? We'll all be in Larchmont next week. newcomers, you're the reason we're here. Is there anybody here tonight in their first 30 days of sobriety? If you could just give us your first name, we'd just like to welcome you.
My name's Mike, I'm an alcoholic.
Hello, Mike. Welcome. Welcome.
Working on an alcoholic.
Hey,
brother. Welcome. Feels like two more. Feel two. Is that it? You sure? It's got that vibe. There's literature over there. If you can fold it, it's free. The books have a nominal cost. You can see any one of us after the meeting if you'd like to purchase a book. We also have a liberal financing policy. If you need a book, we can make terms. They'll be simple. Sponsorship. Sponsorship in Alcoholics Anonymous is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I'll be available at this table after we close the meeting. Please feel free to come and talk to me. Smokers are reminded to please use the butt can provided outside and to stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. Could we please thank our panel? Thanks to all who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the steps discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol on 22nd and Colonial Avenue. Is that correct?
Yeah.
All right. And would anybody like to read the last technically three paragraphs on 164? Nice and loud?
Yeah. Our book is meant to be Oh, I'm Nick, I'm not long.
Hey, hello, Nick.
Our book is meant to be only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us.
great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you tread the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
All right. You got a great way of closing. Can we stretch out to her? Can we get over to her? Is that too much to ask? You can't leave her out.
Can we indeed?
The circle about the vertical.
The circle is unbroken.
Oh, nice. We did it. We got there.
Our Father.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. Lead us not to temptation,